Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show tonight. We have a great show, a bunch of people in studio. We have a good crowd in here tonight. Scott, how are you doing?
I am doing fine, Jeff. How what's going on with you, man?
Oh, just playing around with some. I dug up some of my older pedals. I'm fixing a bunch of my effects pedals. I found my original Fuzz Face, the one I got in like 67.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a germanium one.
Yes,
it's very mellow. So I'm getting that cleaned up, and then I'll do a demo of it soon.
Fuzz Face?
Yeah, I have two of them. I have a red one too.
Oh,
that was like 69, 70. So anyway, what are you up to?
Well, not a whole lot. I had some guests last week, so I was tossing little children around for the past week, literally in the pool. It was lots of fun. But
no YouTube videos.
I do have a
How
YouTube
to
video
toss a child.
No, there is a YouTube video. I put it up there. Matter of fact, you can actually see it. But it's not public. So, but if anyone wants to see it, you can seriously watch a child be thrown 10 feet in the air. I'm not. But for fun, everyone enjoys it.
So,
anyways, but I did want to let everyone know that, you know, we have one more week before you can register for the Audio Technica ATW 1101 wireless system for guitar that we're giving away next week.
Ooh,
with our
nice
guest Norman Harris from Norm's Rare Guitars.
Yes.
And then we have other giveaways coming up where we'll be giving away an Eminence Governor speaker from the good folks Eminence, and then a Wampler slow distortion pedal autographed by Brian Wampler.
That's pretty cool. His stuff is great.
Definitely check that out. And join our Facebook page and check out our website for those contests to sign up. And for anyone, just let them know, if you guys want to call and speak to our guests today, you can call 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815, or you can join our live chat on our website, www.flowguitarenthusiast.com.
That's great. All right, we got a lot to talk about. This week was really a privilege. I was able to check out an album. It's coming out very soon, if I'm correct, but an amazing effort. It's just, there's some really cool things we're going to get in, some interesting, but I'm going to start out. Our guests tonight are Incendio, Lisa Carbe, J.P. Duran, and Jim Stubblefield. But before we ask any questions, let me play a clip. This is called Aleph, and it kind of gives you a feel of what they're about. That's a cut from their new album, The Shape of Dreams. Welcome, Lisa, JP, Jim. It's a pleasure to have you guys here. Great album.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure to have you see us.
And that gives you an idea pretty much of the Incendio sound, but this album is so much more than just that, because they're experimenting. This album, they've experimented with a lot of other instruments. This is, I think, the first time Incendio's used electric guitars, 12-string acoustic guitars, steel-string acoustic guitars. So, and they're getting into a more, their musical styles are just radically expanding. You're doing a lot of interesting stuff. So I just wanted to mention that. I'm going to play some clips throughout the show showing some of that stuff. But anyway, whoever wants to jump in, what made you decide to do an album like this? What was your, you know, your feeling in the concept of Shape of Dreams? What was, how did this become what it is?
Well,
they're all looking.
We just started writing. I mean, that's really how every CD starts. We just start writing and bringing in songs to each other, or parts of songs. And although we do a lot of writing together, every CD has been a culmination of all of our writing. We just decided to have this one be every song we write together. So we got together for writing sessions. People brought in ideas. And everybody listens to all sorts of different music, so people would bring in a more Mediterranean flavor or a more Middle Eastern flavor or whatever. And then we'd sort of gang tackle it.
That was probably the biggest difference. We did Vihuela in 2009, I think. It was a more subdued record in terms of having just three guitars and a little bit of percussion. So it was really stripped down, and we came to the next level of really listening to each other and playing together. And so I think what we did was we established a work mode that we hadn't had before. We had collaborated, Jim and I had collaborated songs. Occasionally the three of us would write together, Jim and her, me, we'd write alone. This was like, we got to write this together. So everybody gang tackled on the ideas. But, well, why not electric guitar? Well, if we're going to do that, let's do this. What amp are you going to use? So there, it's always been open communication, but on this it was really like, let's see what the three of us can do. And that was huge.
Yeah, and I think one of the really important things that we were trying to do is expand the more world element of our music and be more eclectic than we've ever been. Our early records are a lot of Latin rumba influence music, but we always kind of experimented with a little Celtic or a little Middle Eastern, and we decided, you know, let's really expand that. And so on this record, we have a Celtic flavored piece, we have a couple Middle Eastern pieces, we have some rumbas, we have some bossa nova almost, or Brazilian, and also lots of different kinds of stringed instruments, lots of guitars, but bouzoukis and things like that, to really make it just a true world fusion record. And normally, like I would often write songs by myself, and JP and Lisa would write songs together, and we deliberately said, let's write every single song together. And so this is the only time in the history of the band we've done that every single song was written by all three of us.
Yeah. Well, I always felt that you guys always had a strong world influence, if you could call it that category, even though you have a, you know, it's obviously a Latin feel. Now, a lot of your stuff that you've done works, you know, you can tell also from hearing you guys live, it kind of works. Now, when you did this album, because you got a lot of layers and you got a lot of effects in this album, obviously, I think you didn't really care about the live show. You just wanted to create, right?
That's true. But I mean, really, in all of our CDs, except Intimo and Vihuela, there's tons of layers. And that's the deal, is when we come to playing it live, we go, okay, what are we not going to play? What can we play with the four of us that's going to make this song really sing? And so, I mean, that's the same thing we did with this one. But everything we can do live, even without the keyboard or...
Yeah. But I mean, you're going to bring more guitars now?
I think we're going to try to bring more guitars if the budget's there. I'd like to get out my Paul Reed Smiths and Mesa Boogies and have that up there.
Yeah, that would be great.
You know, I'm gonna let the personal cat out of the bag here, so, because it's kind of an important thing. Apart from like listening to a lot of Led Zeppelin and stuff like that, your listeners don't know that I have known you since I was in about the fifth or sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff, in a lot of ways, has been instrumental in bringing all sorts of musics to me when I was listening to Hendrix and Zeppelin. He was plying me with Genesis and Tower of Power and Yes and Ralph Vaughan Williams and saying, you know, there's so much orchestration here. There's so many pieces here. So at least for my contributions, you are a little bit to blame. So that's
I know I bugged you guys to, like, when are you going to do electric? I know I've said that for years.
No, it's so much of the orchestrations. Like, I think of it as the filigree work, and we all like to do it. Hey, if there's a little bell here or there's a little some other kind of sound, what's that underpinning? You know, in a previous album, we had one thing with a kind of a spy guitar running underneath it. So there's always been there's a side of the band that when we play live, I do think we take a cue from Zeppelin, that we all love the albums are one thing, they're orchestrated. There's a million different guitar parts Jimmy Page is doing. And then when it's live, it's just you guys, and we just go for it. So that's how we kind of go, okay, it doesn't have to be exactly like that. We'll make up for it with the energy and the intensity of the playing. So
yeah, and with any good song, as long as you've got the melody and just the underpinning, you can make it work.
Yes. But I've noticed, you know, you were saying some of the influences, like that you've been influenced by Zeppelin.
All of us.
I'm really hearing a strong prog influence. I'm hearing Jim's Secret Life as a prog rock guitarist come out. It's the changing rhythms and stuff like that. It's just amazing what you guys did on this album. We're going to play that in a minute. What I do want to play is show this interplay between the steel string guitar and gut string. I'm going to play a clip from Cante Celtica. And who is playing steel string?
JP is playing the steel string on that. Yeah,
and you're going back and forth. You're playing the nylon string. Okay, let me play this clip. Take a listen to this. Between you guys, it's just really killer. Great technique. The clarity of what you're playing on the gut string, Jim, is just amazing. It's just well engineered too. Which acoustic guitar were you using?
On that one, for the lead, it was a Taylor. It's an older Taylor, I think, from the late 70s, smaller body Taylor that just really, really rings beautifully. And then the background guitars were early 80s Yamaha 12 string that we have.
That's a nice 12 string sound.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't think it's ever recorded quite as well as we lowered the action on it, and it was a little buzzy, and I thought, oh, but it actually lowering the action changed the sound completely.
And it stayed in tune.
It stayed in tune better, and it was like, oh, let's try it on that. And in that part specifically, that real chimey 12, you know, stereo 12 or two mono 12 strings played as closely together as possible and then panned hard left and hard right. That's that the bed of that piece.
Yeah, the beginning of that piece, I left that in there because of that whole little guitar, that 12-string interlude setting up the leads.
Yeah.
So we have a question here on our chat room, and just to kind of rephrase it for him, it's from Bob Weber. I don't know if you know Bob Weber,
yes, we do. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
So his question was, how do you translate this album to playing live? So in this case, where you have multiple guitars, could you kind of describe how you would play this one live?
Oh, guitar synth?
Yeah, Jimmy's got the guitar synth.
We stripped down some parts, but I've been using the GR55. I actually borrowed Jim's synthesizer probably like 8 or 9 years ago. And it was probably it was two generations back from the one we have right now. So progressively, we always been, hey, you know, we're going to be hitting everybody over the head with nylon string guitar for a couple hours here. Let's try to variate it. And the GR55 is a crazy piece of machinery. It combines the synth stuff with a lot of the Cosm stuff. So we're playing, I can play electric 335 through a blown out deluxe or Telecaster or anything. And so we use that quite a bit live to fill out the 12 string textures. Like on a Sukar Mocha, which is another song on the album, I'll switch between B3 and what else I use on that?
Well, the B3 is the actual organ was used.
On the album, the actual organ was used. On a Sukar Mocha, I will, I'd use the B3 on that one and then alternate with some of the other songs with a 12-string sound on there, which is really nice.
But on the record, we actually had a guy play a B3.
Oh, okay. That's what I was going to say.
Ed Roth played the B3.
Yes.
Our neighbor.
And piano did a B3.
Because I'm like, when I heard on the album, I'm like, that's pretty amazing. Yeah. Kind of. I never knew you could do 10 fingers, you know, on a 6-string guitar. It was, I want to show a little bit of that layering. We can show to Bob. I pulled a clip, and this one's from Mitris Dance. Is that how you pronounce
Mitris
it?
Dance.
And what I want you to hear is how they double. There's a 12-string thing going on in the background. There's a lot of little guitar layers where they're doubling parts. And, you can listen if you have headphones at home to check this out in headphones, because there's things flying around and there's little processed. It sounds like a flange or something like that. There's something going on in the background. I don't know what it is.
There's a lot of stuff on that track.
Yeah, there's a lot. But here it is, Mitris Dance. Also, too, there's electric guitar in there, too. But you can hear, if you listen to that clip, or when you get the album, if you listen to that, it's pretty amazing. There's all sorts of little layers and doublings and stuff.
Yeah, Lee's on the bass is doubling all that, and it sounds really cool. Especially that little break. That's my favorite part of the song.
Yeah, that's fun, isn't it?
And the cool thing that's happening there is the guitars tend to be descending, but the electric guitar is ascending. And because they're such completely different timbres, it's like one thing's going up, but the other thing's going up, but they're not in each other's way.
Or contrary motion.
Yeah, but it works there, and the timbre helps.
There's a bouzouki in the song playing a melody earlier on, too. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of just stuff with strings on it.
Who did electric?
I think that was JP.
Yeah, the background parts were electric, and then we alternate on the solos.
What were you
later.
Using on that?
That was Lisa's Ibanez Artist Series, of the same kind that... a bunch of people use.
Who's Robin Ford?
Robin Ford used them at one point. I can't remember his name.
Schofield?
Thank you. John Schofield. That was the first time I ever saw a guy really using regularly. And that guitar is so ridiculously versatile that I believe Ibanez has actually reintroduced it because a lot of people were looking for it. But it's an amazing guitar. We've done metal. We've done all sorts of things with other sessions. And that guitar always sits well in the mix. Going through probably amplitude or guitar rig, which we alternate with on some of these. Although when Jim cut his solos, he did them with another. We'll probably get to that. But
the boogie, yeah.
Yeah.
You're using amplitude there, because I've heard the other stuff that you had done with the blue mist. Is it? Mm. I always get
red mystics.
Red mystics. That blew me away. I thought that was an amp. But the interplay there was really cool. Again, you're talking about orchestration where you're doing. You're doing contrasting lines and stuff like that. And you can hear it when you listen to the album. You can really, if you're listening like in headphones, you can hear everything. The mix is just a killer mix.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's
Bo Astrup.
That's Bo Astrup. And Lee's and Bo working together for hours to get the mix right. And he really helped us bump up our game there. There's a lot of spaciousness in this CD, and we're just thrilled with the way it sounds. So, hi, Bo. you rock.
When I heard that song, I had a picture. I don't know about maybe it's just me. I pictured the little old Six Flags man, you know, doing the dance to that.
Nice.
I don't know why. I just saw these little feet moving around and a guy in a suit.
Wow.
Well, you know, the meds.
Not what I expected, yeah, but I like it.
But the meds should kick in before the end of the show, so that.
Now, so as you wrote together, did you guys record this all live as an ensemble, or did you do overdubs and swap files from each studio?
Every version of what you just said. There are Canta Celta was recorded live off the floor.
Yeah. I think Mitra's Dance was a sequence that I had written, and then Lisa, I believe, wrote some new melody parts because some of my melodies were repeating too much. So I think Lisa wrote some stuff, and you wrote some stuff, and then it got... Then we tracked to it, right? And then we replaced all the MIDI.
And was that the super, the kind of an older piece?
No, well, Song of Tiamat was really old.
Song of Tiamat.
And that one, I lost the sequence of. I lost it, and you found it. And it was like 10 years old or something crazy.
Yeah.
That was going to be on Illumination.
Yeah.
And
I wrote this song, and then once again, they came in and finished it. Like, there's some really cool lines there that those guys wrote that it's like, I can't hear the song now without those lines that they wrote. And so that was just, but that was a MIDI. It was all MIDI. Mm-hmm. And it was like, here's the sequence, and then we lost it.
So that was also, there were many versions of working together where it was, you know, I would say, 50-60% of the album was like gang tackled all at one time. Then the other parts were, hey, I have this core of a song. What do you guys think? Or in the case of that sequence, it was like, we have this song. We have this thing. Here's a direction that I think we could go, and Lisa and I presented it to Jim. He's like, oh, that's cool. Why don't we do this? And so the process was still organic, but it was a little more long-term.
And then sometimes we'd give the sequence, and the drummer would play to the sequence so that they understood what we were going for, and then we would track to
and
that.
And with that in mind, I mean, Nicole Falzoni and Brian Brock both did superlative.
Yes. And they stayed out of each other's way, which was really nice.
Well, they were playing together, or they...
Sometimes some of them they were, yeah.
Some are Brian by himself, of Sword and Shadow is just all Nicole, I believe, with just a few over.
Whereas I think the song, what's the...
Oh, Pirate and the Llama.
What's the one called Linear?
Kayakoka
was all Brian.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So there's all of Nicole, all Brian, and then... The drums and percussion together.
Yeah, I mean, Brian adds so much color to this, and he did tons of overdubs because he'd do one thing and then he'd add this part, and just amazing.
Although there is at least one or two songs on there where he's first performed with his hybrid kit, which we've been touring around with quite a bit now, which is a hand snare, hand timbali, bongo. Cajon. It's a small hand. Hi-hat and hand cymbals.
Yeah, and he has a cajon with a reverse kick drum beater on it, so he can hit it.
So he played for you guys when you were at NAMM.
Right.
He was just amazing. His sound.
The core of that kind of hybrid kit that he's developing started on one or two of these songs that were recorded live, and then, you know, with Nicole with the full drum kit, she always brings just an amazing energy and accuracy to what she's doing. So they both brought it on this recording for sure.
So I have a question for you guys with the percussionist side. When you guys do your album, do you guys actually instruct the drummers on what you're looking for? Or you guys have worked with those two for so long, do you just let them do their thing and that's that?
No, we generally have an idea of what we want. Okay. And then we'll give them the idea of what we want. Often we'll program it to give them an idea. And then we'll say, now, you know, do your thing, but this is the direction we're going
in. Sometimes it's like, it really needs to be this, and other times it's... Well,
but then sometimes they'll be like, well, can I try something? They'll kind of like ask permission. Can I try this idea? And then if we like it, we'll say yes, and if we don't, we'll say no.
Typically, it's pretty great. Typically, it's pretty great, because they have been playing for us for a while. They know what we like. They know what we don't like. Well, we could take this in a slightly different direction.
And sometimes it's a matter of trust. Like with Brian, he'll say, look, I've got to lay down a bunch of stuff for you to hear the final thing. Okay, it's going to be a shaker. It's going to be this. And then you hear the kind of the soup of the percussion all together. And then you're like, oh, wow. Because if you hear it individually, you don't see the vision until everything's tracked.
Yeah.
There's so many interlocking parts.
That's the beauty of having the studio in our house. We can do that and keep experimenting until we come up with something that everybody likes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One question we got from the chat room from Will Huntley is he says the best thing about Incendio is dancing. And he wants to know, is that something you take into account when you're writing your music? I mean, you're using dance forms, but are you trying to make it, or are you focusing on a dance type of format or a live, or you can take it even further. Are you thinking, this album you said you weren't thinking live, but.
I think that considering all of us have a certain amount of rock energy that we like writing with, you know, all of us, we like to bring that to the stage. That just by default, we tend to write with good grooves, with that in mind. I can't say that these two actually think about dancing,
not at all. I think when you're doing world music, you know, there's like, we have a song on here that's kind of like a ballady rumba, which is kind of like the kind of Middle Eastern kind of groove you'd see. So by default, you know, or rumbas by default, like, it's dance music, and really what we're playing is world folk music, you know, whereas folk music for America would be like bluegrass or whatever. Well, folk right. music in Spain is flamenco, folk music, and so we do this world folk music, and by in general, folk music is dance music.
Yeah, it is, wherever, in whatever part of the world.
I would say that Lise and I tend to, and I really love all dance music and funk and all that. Lise and I really tend to ask the question, is it moving, and is it moving correctly? Does it have a groove? Jim tends to not think so much in that. He comes up with these very, very complex lines that usually are couched by him and by us when we get to the production stage in a more dancing. So I think Jim tends to conceive a little less in that, but also there's a whole notion of like having something groove, whether it's slow, whether it's fast, and building it so that there's internal motion, so that there's a groove, whether mm-hmm. you're going to lay the hi-hat back a little bit, or where the cajon's going to go. All of those decisions are significant. So I'd say, yeah, there's an underpinning of dance for me in particular. I love things to just move.
And you know, fundamentally, if it doesn't groove correctly, then it doesn't feel right. You know,
yeah.
if it's not that right tempo, if it's too fast, too slow, then we put it at that place where it feels good, which is often a dance tempo.
Of Sword and Shadow is a good example. I don't know if anybody could dance to that.
You could not dance
true.
To that.
But it does move and have a certain groove to it that's really cool that I always hope that people can dance to if they're not thinking about it.
Well, if you want to try to dance through three or four different changing time signatures.
And we've seen people do it. So
I have to say, my first dance for my wedding was an Incendio song, Loretana.
Yeah.
And that's a waltz.
Well, that's a waltz. Yeah.
Yes.
A waltz.
I was spinning my wife in circles. And
I remember that.
It was fun.
We were honored. Thank
it was
you,
good
sir.
Times.
When I used to play with my brother in the Floral Brothers, we would change time signatures just to watch people that were drinking too much just freak out. But not
like,
that I'm saying
great
that you
to
should
see
do.
Them. They just stand.
They
those,
just kind of look, and then they find one again, and they go back to it. So it was really
where's one?
But that being said, a lot of prog rock guys I know can actually tap their foot to multiple time signatures, and actually your music definitely gets your foot tapping.
And the Cats in Dream Theater can play anything. I remember with Master Puppets, they did the whole album one night, I think.
I did shoot that.
Billy Joel. Yeah. Oh, that's the one.
Well, that's one of them I did for. Yeah.
And what's the other video you did?
When Dream and Day Reunite. For Dream Theater. So it was their 20th anniversary. He shot at the Pantages.
Very cool, Scott.
Angeles, great. So. Great DVD.
And he did your DOA. Is it DOA?
DOA Noche.
He authored the DVD package.
Who cares about me? We're talking about Incendio.
We're embarrassing him.
It's a love fest.
So anyway, so you did use all sorts of different techniques. Anything that comes to mind that you did that was radically different from anywhere else, that an experiment that went right, maybe miking or effects or...
I would say really just in the mix process, definitely, we experimented with a lot of different things we hadn't done
before.
I'll
tell you right off the bat, one thing I hear that I really was happy about was in the percussion and the drums, there's a lot of stuff going on and you can hear everything. You can hear on like... Song of Tiamat, you can hear the drum set and you can hear all the Dumbek kind of Middle Eastern percussion, and it doesn't sound like they're fighting for space.
Yeah.
And I think Bo opened it up. So you can hear this churning Middle Eastern percussion with the bells, and then this driving, you know, drum set, and it doesn't sound like it's a boxing match. And yeah. I just was like, wow, that's really, for me, that was, to me, for one of the things I noticed throughout the whole record was just that space that was shared by the rhythm.
Yeah. This is the first time you've used Bo, or have you used him on
this? The first time.
First time. We've self-mixed everything, and we're really proud of the way those sounded. I think there are two things that come into play. One is we're always trying to get warmth in the low end and the mid-lows, and bass management has always been, you know, kind of something we know we need to do that, and we learned so much from working with Bo on that. They were subtle. They were small things, chopping everything under 30, chopping everything under 40, compression management, all those little things. But here's the chance for plug here. I think something that made a huge sonic difference with this is the good folks at Black Lion Audio in Chicago. We got our Motu 828 Mark II modded by those guys and got a micro clock as well. And I think a lot of the dimensionality that people might hear in this CD was not just due to the work that Bo and Lisa did together to prep the tracks and really mix them, but the fact is that the clocking that we were able to get on to keep the jitter down and all those kind of things really came into play, because I think this is our most dimensional CD, and we will eventually be released in 2496 as well, possibly on HD tracks and some other medium. And I think people will be able to hear more the notion of being able to get your ears or your hands behind the sound. That's something we really wanted to try to do. And we met Bo kind of by accident at the Viva Cantina in Burbank, and it just really, really worked out beautifully. I knew he had worked on some of Marc Antoine's stuff before, and he'd done quite a bit of acoustic work here and in Europe. But it was just fortuitous, and he really, really did a great job and taught us a lot. So that would be a major difference. We knew we wanted to leap forward, and it really helped.
Yeah, no, I think listening to especially the bass is really punchy.
Really focused.
Yeah. Really in your face, without being too much in your face, but you can feel it.
We used a lot of different things, but we used the Jack Joseph Puig plugin on some of it. Not all of it, but that definitely helped.
We are longtime Mackie users. All the drums were actually done with the Mackie 1604 with the
board, right?
Yeah, with the one that plugs directly in. Oh no, I can't remember.
Onyx?
The Onyx, thank you, yes. The Onyx boards. And the pre sounded killer, and it's in the proof's in the pudding with the drums. They sound great.
And mainly all Audio-Technica mics for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all. Yeah, all. Yeah.
Which reminds everyone to sign up for the Audio-Technica wireless guitar system on our website.
So. Yes.
But you remember we were talking about, I don't know if we're going to remember the engineer. I was telling you at the last time we saw you about a magazine article that was done by a guy who had done Fleetwood Mac, right?
Oh,
I can't
remember
who it was. And he said, well, you know, they were asking him the standard engineer producer questions. What's your, like, what do you really go for? And he's like, the 4033 on acoustics. Works every time, gets air, dimensionality, and we, you know, thanks to the good folks at Audio-Technica, can backed into that mic 10, 11 years ago, and it's our go-to mic for getting, because it gets air. It kind of cancels the low, you know, as long as you place the guitar correctly, right around the 12th fret usually for when we all three of us record, and just, you know, get that balance between not too boomy and get the air, and that mic's been great for us.
I had a question for you guys. Well, last time you guys were here, you were talking about how you consistently tune almost between every take.
Mm-hmm.
So with having all these different stringed instruments and all the different players, what kind of tuning are you guys using? Are you just using a standard tuning? Are you guys temper tuning? Is there any special tuning you're using? Or
standard tuning.
Just pulling out a Peterson? And
no, I actually, when I record, I actually have the iPhone Polytune by TC Electronic. So I have my iPhone on mute or whatever, and I just have it on my leg. And I'll just put the Polytune on, and I'll just make sure I'm in tune. Because on the nylon string guitars, sometimes as you get higher up on the neck, it starts to get funky. So there's actually been songs in the past where we actually had to retune the guitar in the middle of a solo. So you're like going up higher, and then it's like I'd have to continue the rest of the solo after I retune the guitar because it would start to go sharp or flat.
Wow.
And a lot with nylon string guitars, unless there's some that intonation is pretty amazing, but some, no matter how good the guitar is, there's just some funky things. So we've had to, in the past, do that. But
And the weather affects it so much, too.
Oh, yeah. But so. You are, I know you're electrics. You've done the buzzy feet. And mm-hmm. Have you done it with your acoustics?
I did it on one, a Charles Fox, a really nice Charles Fox nylon string that an unnamed airline actually snapped the headstock off of about 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. So that's in the shop being repaired. But it actually made a big difference. It's a pretty amazingly intonated guitar. By contrast, on a lot of our CDs, we have used the Liza's 1962 Marcelino Lopez on lead tracks, but mostly on rhythm tracks. And keep, I mean, that is just a wonderful sounding, warm, wonderful guitar. But you begin to travel above the fifth fret, and it just is, and do chords, it's a nightmare. So that's really where you go, okay.
And sometimes
I love
the strings. Like yeah. I have a couple Pedro Maldonados. I have a Negra and a Blanca. The Blanca, no matter what strings I put on it, the tuning is amazing.
Dead
the
on.
Negra, I have to use specific gauge and specific brands, and the intonation is fine. And it's really temperamental. Mm-hmm. And my Alvarez nylon string is perfectly in tune all the time, but it doesn't quite sound as good as the more expensive handmade guitars, but the tuning is dead on.
One thing that we try to be consistent to is Savarez strings have been really, really great to us, and we've been using them for a very, very long time. We've tried other brands, and they sound really cool, but in terms of working with the guitars, with the Maldonados, with the guitars we have for Alvarez Yairi that we play live, the Savarez have been, the red card particularly, has been the most consistent for us, and they sound great.
I've heard that the Savarez haven't always been a consistent one. We have another question from Will, which I'll tell Will right now, I've been an instigator trying to get them to do this. He says, there's been a movement in the musical world for surround sound music. Is that something the band feels they want to delve into? And if so, what kind of sonic space would they want to create with the complex sound of the band?
We have one surround project, which is actually our 2005 DVD. There's a stereo mix on there and a surround mix. And the mechanics of doing it, that was done by our friend Gil Morales, who did a beautiful job on that. And I would like to expand in the future. It's a matter of really setting aside time and tuning the studio so that we could do it, because even doing that job that we did with Gil was a lot of work. But we would love to do that. But I mean, I think we could revisit, because the music is really cinematic and would lend itself to it. With the first two CDs, you're talking about going back to ADAT and dropping everything to 2496 or 24192 and doing it. But
Doing surround mixes, I've done those before, and it's creating that ambience. You got to play with. It's better when you record ambient tracks. You got to put more tracks. If not, you can do it with digital reverbs and stuff, but it's not as cool as miking it.
But the thing too with our recordings is that for the most part they are so dense. There's already so many things going on that there's a lot of things you can place in the stereo field and the surround field behind you that would work. I don't think we'd have to do a whole heck of a lot. And then that was the nice thing on the DVD, is we were able to put things in the center and then the audience a little back, and then move things around, and you have a lot more sonic space. So you don't and you're not trying to hit a red line either. They can turn it up so you can really go for the spaciousness thing. So yes, Will, at some point we will do that.
Yeah, your new album is so layered, it would be an easy one. And now that you've done a 2496, SACD, Incendio SACD. I'm just throwing
that out.
What
was the first one? The first one was HDCD, right?
The first two I had were HDCD. Yeah. I've never got to hear them in that. I don't own an HDCD player.
I did play them. There was a difference. You could hear it.
Yeah.
With the extra bit.
That's what we were told.
Just so everybody knows, HDCD, regular disc was, I think, 16-bit. It gave you an extra 2 bits or 4 bits. I can't remember.
Might be 20.
And I think it went to 20 bits. So it allowed your CD, if you had the decoder, you could actually listen to 20-bit, which at that time was a big deal. It would make a difference.
Which means you could hear the dog walk into the room in the middle of the take, as opposed to.
Well, you could hear a different. I could hear a difference in the noise floor on your album. It was a lot quieter when you listened to it in HDCD.
Exactly.
And then one other question before I play another clip: has Incendio worked on any TV or film recently, or are they just focused on their current CD?
We're always writing for whatever project comes in. We had a couple of songs in Bridesmaids. And we get songs we had a song in The Secret quite some time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But as a band, nobody's given us we would actually love to be able to just score a movie specifically with just all of our music. But it winds up usually that we get a piece in a movie or a television show or something.
Mm-hmm. Lise and I actually wrote stuff for a History of Mexico a couple years before for a History Channel first episode through a friend of ours. And we went back and heard some of those tracks, and like they're like kind of pre-incendio, except with more orchestral stuff. And Jim has had some of his stuff, you know, used as well on television. So we have forays into it. Sometimes it's purpose-ridden. I know there was one piece that was used in Gene Simmons' Family Jewels. I think it might have been Jogwe Pop.
Yeah, no, we have pieces of Gene Simmons' Family Jewels. We have pieces on what the old show, The Girls Next Door, which was the Hugh Hefner thing. We have stuff. One of our songs is still a theme song on a Brazilian soccer show. Another one of our songs is a theme song for a news station. Stuff on the History Channel, stuff on Garden TV.
Stuff on the Discover. You know, a lot of times we don't know because our stuff is out there being licensed and we won't know till we get our statements.
Mm-hmm. And some of it too, like our friends down in, I don't know, is it Mexico or Brazil? Or it might be both. I know somebody's been using Vamos Ya down in Mexico for a couple of years without licensing or anything as a theme for their soccer show.
Oh, no, that's a La Corrida. They're using that
La
also.
Corrida.
Anyway, there is stuff out there. It's mm-hmm. But sometimes we find out after the fact.
Yeah, sometimes we track it, license it. Sometimes we're not able to.
But we would love to score an indie movie. That would be a lot of fun.
Or a video game, because I've been writing a lot of orchestral music. So
That's right.
That would be kind of interesting hearing your music in a video
game. It wouldn't be this music. It would probably just be like orchestra stuff, you know, like spy music and stuff. But hey, if they want to license it for a video game,
we just found out a song that Lisa and I did for
one of the library
Sonathon
CDs
library, got used in what is it? Call of Duty 3 or one of the ones that was just released now I could mention it. What is it called?
Black Ops?
No. Oh God, I can't.
It was like Call of Duty. It was one of those first person shooter games
that just came out this last December. The song is called La Bruja de San Martin, and we're performing on it. I rap on it, which is ridiculous.
He raps in Spanish, and we're singing on it. It's fun.
And all of a sudden, it's like all over YouTube as this song that people are listening to on Island Radio, where I think you're killing zombies. And I get Far Cry.
Far Cry 3. Yes.
Something like that.
Those are big games. I hope you guys get a good royalty check.
I hope we do too.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. They sell more than records.
Well, the fact that people are like hearing this, it's playing on Island Radio, and they're just driving and they're on the car shooting either zombies or
and I'm
or
sure that's
people.
Exactly what you imagine when you're writing the piece
that's
that
it
would
I
be
thought.
Used for the music to shoot zombies
blood
by.
How did you know?
Blood-drenched violence. It's like a ska piece. It's like a
I remember when JP was telling me he was in a zombie phase. He was writing zombie music.
There you go.
Okay, I'm going to play another clip. This is I don't know how to say this right. Cayo Coco?
Cayo Coco.
Yes.
Cayo Coco. And this is the interplay between the 12-string and the gut string guitar. Here we go. So you can hear there, there's a little guitar thing back and forth with the 12 string and the gut string. And that's incredible how you got that last little, there's one fill that you're doing, there's one riff that you're doing in there. It's like, how did he get that in there and get back to one in time? That was pretty great. And everything's clean. I mean, you can hear when you're picking all those notes, you can hear everything really, really, really. It's real clear.
Well, thank you.
Did you nail that, or did it take a little while? Make me feel worse. Tell me you got it one take.
That one?
Yeah.
All of the guitars that I did at my studio, I didn't punch them in. I just maybe did a few takes, but they're not cobbled together.
But you nailed that last one. That's I loved that run at the end of that.
Cool. Thank you.
That piece.
We're like congratulating each other. It's like
Will in the chat room is
job well done.
He's saying here your love for Jim's love for video games, and he's saying he's saying what would you imagine your music to be the score for? He says JP as Zorro comes to mind.
Jim just pulled up a character and said this would be JP if he was in
Pathfinder, right?
Yeah. Dungeons and Dragons or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it wasn't quite Zorro, but it was close.
Some sort of Spanish or Latin American.
With a rapier fantasy. Like the guy in Princess Bride?
Yeah, oh, perfect.
Inigo Montoya, you killed my father. Oh. that's JP.
Nemo in the chat room is asking, he's saying that Illumination is his favorite song on the Dia y Noche album. He said, what was the inspiration for that song?
For Illumination?
It was the candle store, wasn't it? No,
well,
I'm kidding.
I remember I wrote it when I wrote that song. I was up with my wife and I had just moved into a new place, and I had this really small little studio to work in, and I said, well, let me try to write something with a synthesizer. So I wrote it on the synth, and I sequenced it, and I asked my wife Stella what she thought. I said, it sounds like a nursery rhyme or something to me. And she goes, no, it's really cool. And I just remember saying, doesn't it sound like a nursery rhyme or something, like, you know, the melody? And she goes, no, it's really cool. You should just, you know, whatever. So I brought it to them, and I left it with them for about a few weeks, and they completely rocked it out. They completely did their magic to it. And then I came in, and they're saying, you know that thing you sent us? And I was just like, wow. So it's that perfect example of like bringing like something that was melody that I was really unsure of. And then the production team of those two, mm-hmm. Lisa and JP, they just made it sound great. And I was like, oh, okay, yes.
But I will also add that song went through 3 iterations. He liked what we did the first one. He goes, no, but let's push in a slightly different direction. And we did. And it was like, we all like, no, this is wrong. So what ended up being on Illumination was actually the 3rd draft. So there are other drafts of this stuff. It's not like, oh, we find an arrangement and it works perfectly. Sometimes like we'll do an entire thing and, you know, we'll listen to what Jim did and was like, oh, not quite. Or Lisa will listen to something I proposed. It's like, JP, really, you need to go to sleep because that sucks, you know. Or vice versa.
But what's so cool is like, for instance, with JP and Lisa, they both have different, like, they have things they agree on, and then there's things that are just different enough so that, like, something that I can almost always tell, like, when Lisa does something, like, that has to be Lisa. Like, she'll write some really interesting, like, string line, and I'm like, that sounds like Lisa. That sounds like a Lisa thing. And JP will do something else, and that sounds like JP. And at one point, I need to sit down and actually play stuff and say which one's you and which one's JP.
I think,
and see if I'm correct.
I think that's generally true. If it's a little more dissonant and avant-garde or a little more 20th century, it will tend to be Lisa. And if it's a little, say, bluesier, almost country, it'll tend to be me.
So, ladies and gentlemen, you'll have to hear the other versions of Illumination in the
That'll be the box set.
Box
set. Yeah.
I have coming soon.
I have thought about that,
including the original MIDI track.
That would actually, yeah, the demos of this stuff would be
funny.
Very interesting. We're almost out of time. I want to play another clip. This is from the song Zephyrus. This is kind of a different feel. I'm cutting everybody out there. I'm cutting little clips. These songs are a lot more developed, and I'm just pulling little snapshots. But this is, it kind of features Lisa on bass, and it's kind of an interesting open sound. It's not real layered. There is some stuff going on and a little bit in the background, but it's kind of a really open sound. And this is the middle section of the song called Zephyrus. Thank you. Anyway, that's a clip that I think I could play that would probably stump people. It's like, what's the name of this band? You know, because it's one of those things where they really stretched and they went out into another area, but really a beautiful thing. The bass is, I can feel it thumping in my chest.
Good,
even though
you.
I'm listening through headphones.
Yeah, that's fun because that piece just, that keeps speeding up and speeding up and speeding up, that part.
And you know what? We need to send a big thank you to Nick Kirko for borrowing his bouzouki. That's what.
Yes, that was the bouzouki.
Yeah, that's the real deal, there, folks.
It's not sampled.
And Lisa, yeah. when you record your bass, you plug direct in. You don't mic an amp or anything like that.
No, I go direct.
Which bass was that, by the way?
That was my Hennewinkle, one of three that I have. It's with the quilted maple on the top. Bartolini pickups
and 18 volt.
And he is just, just such a great luthier, Pete. Just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Check out if anybody is interested, Pete Hennewinkle.
It's out of Cypress, California. Hennewinkle guitars or HennewinkleBasses.com, something like that. Check out Pete Hennewinkle.
Yeah, the that mix and that kind of punchiness in the bass. Your albums have, your bass has always been pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a bow thing?
I think what he did was help take out a little bit of the wooliness, but Lisa's always had a great tone. The wooliness has come from, hey, more bass, because of a settled bottom for stuff. You know, there are all these guys that were always like, bass should be felt, not heard. We're always like, well, no, the bass should be heard.
Yeah, I always like my lines to be, you know, all the lines to be really heard, but you want that low end. Yeah. And he helped us really get that mung that's in around 250, 220,
right.
Get some of that out and push up the high mid so you get that nice attack.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of the overtones, but still it's solid.
And not be afraid to chop. You know, chop at 20, chop at 40, chopping really low so that the mastering engineer isn't dealing with this low rem, or you can leave that a little more in the kick. It was the bass management that I think we were like 95% on our other CDs.
Mm-hmm.
Bo really helped to get us that last bit home, so we learned a lot.
And also Bernie Becker always masters our CDs. Well, he has been for the past, I don't know, four or five, and he's just incredible.
Yes, no, it just sounds great. I can't wait to hear the 2496
I'm
mix. That'll be pretty good. Well, we're out of time, and I want to play a last clip to take us out tonight. I just want to mention everybody, their website is incendioband.com. Their YouTube channel is Incendio Band. Twitter is at Incendio Band. And Facebook, you guessed it, Incendio Band.
Consistency.
Consistency. That's good. Real quick, your individual Twitters and Facebooks?
Just go to jimstubblefield.com and all the links are there.
CarbeDuran.com and LisaCarbe.com.
And JPDuran.com.
Okay, there we go. And then also, too, I just want to mention that Jim Stubblefield has his own app for iPhone, which is a really cool app. Keisha posted all the new stuff that he's doing. And one other thing before we go, check out on YouTube, Incendio, search Concerto de Aranjuez and the Comfortably Numb. It's an interesting merging of two songs. Totally different feels. I was listening to it just before the show, and it was pretty amazing.
And you really get to hear the Roland synth on that.
Yes, and it's just kind of strange hearing this rock guitar coming from a classical guitar that with a
freaks people out.
It does. Our last clip before we go, I'm going to play the Song of Tiamat clip, and this shows electric guitar. You're playing? Are you playing electric guitar?
It's JP plays a nylon solo, and then electric, and then I play a nylon solo, and then I play electric. So we both play nylon, we both play electric.
I think this, I'm probably missing the first part of it, because it's pretty long, but I'm going to let it'll take us out for the show. I want to thank you guys again.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
It's just a real pleasure, and I'm real happy. Good luck with this album.
June 25th.
I think it's going to be
available June 25th on iTunes, Amazon.com.
Pretty much everything.
Everywhere.
Okay.
And next week, everyone, turn in for Norman Harris from Norm's Rare Guitars.
Cool.
Which will be really cool. We'll be talking everything vintage. So that will
and
be
And we'll
fun.
Just see
fun,
if...
Very fun.
We'll see if Scott will lose it and actually try to buy the guitar from him. Right on the spot.
No, that will not happen.
Okay, this is Song of Tiamat. You'll hear... This is another big first for Incendio, where you're hearing a lot of integration with electric guitars. I think there's some steel string... There's some flanged guitars. There's some bizarre stuff going
all
on
types
in the
of
background.
Weirdness.
Okay. Everybody, good night. Thank you so much. And we'll see you guys next week. Here's Song of Tiamat.